Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise.
Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard.
You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios and Speak Boise at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios,
speak and be heard.
Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communication experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprint specializes in making your organization more visible with custom brand apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. You want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com Boise or call 208 Imprint. That's 208-467-7468. Yeah.
Hi, Colin.
Hi, Erin.
How are you?
I'm starving.
You're eating a Greek salad from Panera,
which is like our personal favorite.
It is our personal favorite.
Rather often.
We do.
A funny story, I have not a big gulp, but I have a fairly large soda.
Yeah, no, that's actually not that large for you.
That's not that big for me.
Right.
This is like tiny.
That's large for me.
But funny story. Oh my God, sorry. That was foul. Can we cut that?
Oh shit.
I went out. I met some friends this week and I had a moment where I was like, you're a new person. I've never met you before. It's a friend of a friend.
Okay.
They said something to me, which was, if anybody else would, I would cut them in half.
Oh, my God.
But for them, I was like, we went to 10th Street Bar. Okay. And I wasn't drinking. Oh, I had one Rattler. That's a lie. So I had one Rattler. But before that, I had sodas and I had a Diet Coke.
And of course.
Thank you. And I drink soda fast, very fast, especially
so fast
bar tap kind of soda. For some reason, it just hits different.
We went to the Ram once and we probably were there for maybe 45, 50 minutes. You had four sodas. That's not an exaggeration. It was insane.
No. And so I drink them really. I was just
slurping
it down. And okay. One of the guys looked at me and was like, we should get you a dog bowl. I was like, and like everybody else was like, Zach, you know, my roommate Zach,
oh my
his
God.
Total bitch, was just like, and but like looked at me like, cut him, and I was like, oh my God, that's so
did
funny.
You just like give him a break because he was new?
Yeah, he was new. He didn't know me. He
because someone else would have gotten a little slap.
Oh, they would have gotten a you want to see a dog? Well, wolf. Here's a head bitch in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
But for
yeah.
them, I was just like, oh my God, yeah, you're so funny. It was actually pretty funny because I was after that moment, I was like, bitch, slow down, because I was just like.
Okay. All right.
Slurping.
Oh God, that's disgusting.
On some soda.
Wow.
I do. It's my addiction.
Well, great.
So
I've been watching a lot of things.
Oh yeah. What are you watching?
I've watched a lot of movies, and I told you this earlier this week that I wasn't going to tell you what I watched until today.
Oh yeah. Okay. Let's hear this.
Because one of them, you're going to be like, oh, cool. And the other, you're going to be like, oh, fucking course you did.
Okay. I'm ready.
Well, the one I watched before that last week, Seth and I watched a movie called Hell or High Water, which is kind of like a country heist film starring Chris Pine and Ben Foster. It's pretty good. Jeff Bridges is in it as well.
I've never heard of that.
It was kind of, I think, a little under the radar, but it was really good. So the two movies we watched over the weekend, the first one was Training Day with Denzel Washington.
Okay, yeah, classic.
I'd never seen it before, and it was really good.
He's good in that.
He is amazing
kind
in
of
it.
Terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying, but like just commands the screen, of course. So it's Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. The second movie we watched this week, last weekend, was Goodfellas.
Of course you did.
And so I had
How
never
many times
seen
have you
that.
Seen it?
That was the first time I'd seen it. I had never seen Goodfellas. Okay. And Seth is like, you really will like it, which of course I loved it. So anyway, other than that, we started WandaVision.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good.
What episode are you on?
We're on probably episode 5.
Jeez.
So we got to the part where like Vision is very much like there's something going on here. Yeah. And she keeps like, so they have the twins and they're like 5 years old and then like blah, blah, blah. And so now we're to the point where it's Rambo, who is Captain Marvel's best friend's daughter. Right. And there's this new, instead of Shield, it's called Sword. And
it's Sword, right, and Shield exist at the same time.
I see. Okay.
So Shield is more for, I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's more like something. Earth.
Yeah.
Like it's like a shield around Earth.
And Sword is,
it's more like international.
Extraterrestrial. Yeah, yes. And so
I said international, like
internet, you know, we're just going to, you know, other
Geneva
universes.
Or Genova, whatever. Genova.
And so we were watching that. So we just got to the episode where like we're kind of trying to figure out like, okay. And then Catherine Hahn at one point, she's like, should I take that from the top? And then like everyone kind of knows like, oh, like this is she's facilitating all of this. Cause at the beginning, you don't know, is she the victim or the victimizer?
Yeah.
Right? Wanda. And then you're like, oh shit, she's making her own little game. So the episode we just watched, it ends with her twin brother coming, but it's not
Pietro,
but it's not her twin. It's the guy from X-Men.
Yeah.
Quicksilver. Magneto says, so it's, which is like following the trope of like commonly recasting main like characters or whatever in sitcoms. So it's so good. I didn't expect to like it as much as
it's,
I do
really,
but I
good.
Do like it a lot.
Yeah, because Marvel TV shows aren't terrible. There are definitely people who really enjoy them, but on the whole they're not the best, and they don't have as much continuity.
Right.
Because at the time, Marvel wasn't owned by Disney. The moment Disney kind of scooped them up, they like, Kevin Feige was like iron fist. Like he's like, it's going to look and feel and behave the same.
Right.
So everything I've heard, Loki's coming out soon, but everything I've heard between WandaVision and even Winter Soldier and, oh my gosh, why can't I think of it? Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Mm-mm.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
There you go.
Is incredible.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. That would be the next thing you could watch.
Yeah. And Seth. Yeah. I think Seth might have started that. But yeah. So that was what I watched. So really a lot of good stuff.
Really
a lot
good.
Of good stuff. What did you watch this last week or two?
Last week I didn't watch a lot.
You were busy.
I was busy. On Monday I watched Cruella de Vil. Cruella.
Yes, you did.
I don't want to say too much because I kind of want you to watch it and we do an episode.
Yeah, we're
going to.
Yeah, that's right. We were. Yeah.
So,
okay,
that's
fair.
I will start it off with saying I enjoyed the movie and I'll end it there.
And you said you weren't going to.
And because of one person in particular, and that is Emma Stone. Now she was. Nope. Not going to do it.
We're not going to do it.
We're not going to do it.
Save it.
We're going to save it.
Talk more into the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Okay,
so that one was really
so
good.
So that one, and then what else?
And then I watched the movie we're doing today. And then another one. I've been watching this kind of anthology, like short story called Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And it's really weird. I've never seen so many like animated boobies in my life.
Are they nice boobies?
Yeah, they're great. Animated like tatas. And I'm like, there's a lot. And animated dicks, which I'm just like, did not know that was going to happen.
Oh.
But it's like all about either, it's like about death or robots and then sometimes love stories. But they're just really short 17 minute.
Oh,
loop.
Interesting.
And it's just every episode is different.
Oh, okay.
Handle a different topic. So I've been watching, that's all I watch. Oh, I started Harry Potter over again.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Always. Always.
Yeah.
So glad to hear that.
Well, Aaron, you're in the captain's seat.
And I'm so glad because this film was off the charts for me. It made me feel like I have a lot of feelings about it. And obviously, since I just watched it, like
oh
it just
God.
Ended like an hour or so ago. Like I feel very like,
what are you going to do if I shit all over this movie?
I'm going to chalk it up to you don't understand because
you're
not a woman.
You got something in between your legs that just makes it impossible.
And,
hey.
You know, that's what I'll chalk it up to because some of these experiences were so direct to my life that I was just like, this is really, really like it was there was a lot to digest and like some of the feelings were really uncomfortable, but it was also like, it was, I really thought this movie was excellent. So the movie, and we've been pronouncing it wrong basically this whole time. That, so it's Promising Young Woman, not Promising Young
which
Women.
We could talk about. I don't like the title.
Oh, okay. Well, so Promising Young Woman is a 2020 film. It got a lot of Oscar buzz. We'll go into the awards a little bit later. But this is a film that we've wanted to do since the beginning. I think this is literally the first thing we talked about.
Yes.
When we started the podcast, like even before we decided on Wonder Woman as our first episode, we're like, we have to do Promising Young Women. At the time, it was like $20 to rent on Amazon. And
the only thing I spent $20 on is like Panera.
Yeah.
Or gas at most. Sometimes it's like $5 and I'm limping down the road.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying $20 for a movie.
So right now it's $6 to rent on. On what?
I went to Redbox.
Oh, I was on my couch, so I watched Amazon.
Convenience.
And it was worth every penny, in my opinion. So anyway, let's talk about the basics. So this film was written and directed by Emerald Fennell. We'll talk about her quite a bit later, but this is her directorial debut. It stars Carey Mulligan, Bo Burnham, and Alison Brie. It has some really good supporting characters. Molly Shannon, Jennifer Coolidge, Laverne Cox, Adam Brody, Sam Richardson, Clancy Brown. So there's a lot of supporting characters, and it's interesting because we're seeing some supporting characters in roles we've never really seen them before. Like Jennifer Coolidge, for example, like as the kind of stuffy housewife mom, like we just don't normally get to see her like that. So there was a lot of supporting characters. So it was released on Christmas Day, 2020. So let's talk about box office. I can't help but think that it would have done a lot better had it not been during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, because this was like in lockdown.
Yeah.
We're not doing anything.
I'm surprised they released it the way that they did, which.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm surprised like they didn't go to like Amazon or like.
Or HBO or something
say,
like that.
Buy it and distribute it.
Yeah.
Which
I don't know.
I think it would have helped a lot.
Yeah. That's probably true. So the IMDb website wouldn't give me like the budget exactly. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So it was between $5 or $10 million was the budget. This movie takes place in Ohio, but it was filmed in LA, of course. It's pretty easy to mimic.
It did?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I thought it was in, it looked like LA.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that was weird. Okay.
Yeah. So the opening weekend, US and Canada made a little over 700,000. Gross US and Canada was about 6.4 million. And then gross worldwide was 15.7 million. So it did well worldwide. A Rotten Tomatoes score. What do you think the tomato meter was?
Is this critic or
this
audience?
Is critics. Tomato meter.
Oh, they rated it pretty high.
How high?
Like above an 80, maybe. We're like 92.
A 90.
Oh, okay, not too bad.
Not too bad. And then audience score.
Audience, I don't think it was a little bit more mixed. So I'm going to say like 85.
88.
Oh.
Yeah, good.
Oh my God.
And our IMDb score was.
What's their rating?
It's 10? Out of 10.
A 7.
7.5.
Oh, yeah, I'm on a roll.
Good for you. And the runtime is less than 2 hours, which we always love.
Is it really?
Yes, it was. It was kissing 2 hours, but it was under 2 hours.
That's shocking.
I know. Well,
because I have things to say.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that. And I feel very defensive of this movie, and we'll get into it. So a quick synopsis. This film is described as a black comedy, a revenge thriller, crime drama, kind of all rolled into one. Carey Mulligan plays the main character of Cassie. She's an almost 30-year-old, and it's very apparent from the beginning she has some trauma in her past, but we don't quite know what it is. She still lives with her parents. She works at a coffee shop. We know she's dropped out of medical school. There's this name Nina that's being thrown around a lot, and we don't know who this person is exactly. But then we see that she is doing things to men that are basically like trying to right the wrongs of the past. And
real quick question.
Yes.
Are we doing spoilers?
I think, yeah.
Okay. I just, okay. Audience,
spoiler
listen.
Spoiler alert.
Yes.
Here we go. Spoil, spoil, point, spoil.
You have every opportunity to watch this movie. Yes. If you haven't watched this movie, watch the movie first because
yes.
I think we need to talk about some details eventually.
Okay. We shall do that. And then she meets, or she re-meets, I should say, this guy named Ryan who comes in the coffee shop, played by Bo Burnham, one of my favorite comedians. And they were classmates at med school and they kind of hit it off and she's pretty hesitant at first and some things happened and then they're like falling in love with each other and then something really big happens. So we'll get to that in a hot minute. But going into some of the awards that this film won, for the Academy Awards, it was nominated for Best Film, Best Actress for Carey Mulligan, that Frances McDormand eventually won for Nomadland, Best Achievement in Directing and Film Editing, and it won the Best Original Screenplay thanks to Emerald Fennell. For the BAFTAs, it was nominated for Best Casting, Best Editing, Original Score, and Best Film.
Yes.
And it won for Best British Film of the Year, which is interesting that they have those distinctions. And
it
Best
won for
Original.
Best British Film of the Year.
Well, if you have like a British director, a British lead actress, I mean, I don't know that it has to be like filmed there for it to be considered.
Or set.
I don't know what their, like metric is for that, but it's interesting that they have two categories. And then the Best Original Screenplay. And then of course, like Golden Globe, Screen Actors, yeah, like it was
People's
nominated.
Choice.
People's Choice. It was nominated for a lot. Getting into the women. Are you ready?
Yes.
Emerald Fennell. Had you heard this name before?
No. I love the name.
Sure.
Fennell. Who doesn't love a Fennell?
Who doesn't love a Fennell? I actually don't love Fennell, but
I've never heard of her before. And I didn't even know she was an actress. So this is very shocking.
And she makes a very small appearance in the film. Did you
she
catch
does?
That? There's a point where Cassie, played by Carey Mulligan, is watching this like makeup tutorial.
Oh, is that her?
That's her.
Oh, hilarious.
Yeah.
Love that.
So as an actress, Emerald Fennell, so actress, writer, director, obviously. Her first acting credit was in 2006. She's actually been in like quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
She's done British stuff a lot mostly. She was in Albert Nobbs with Glenn Close. She was in Anna Karenina, The Danish Girl, and Call the Midwife was what I knew her from.
That's what I've heard most people know her from.
Right. Because I was talking to my mom about it. And she's like, oh, yeah, Call the Midwife. And I was like, oh, yeah, that is her. And I've only seen that film or that TV show just like a smidge. And now she plays Camilla on The Crown.
Oh, does she?
Camilla.
And like the newest season or like in this last
whatever season Camilla was
that first appeared?
I think so.
Oh, okay. So that's I've seen her then.
Yeah.
I've seen her then because I love The Crown.
Yeah. It's amazing. So as a writer, she wrote for a TV show called Drifters, which I believe is a British show. I've heard of it before. She was also on it as well. And she also wrote 6 episodes for Killing Eve. We love that.
I mean, what a good training ground.
Sandra Oh for life.
Yeah, to start this
we
movie.
We should make Sandra Oh t-shirts, honest to God. I love her so much.
I love Sandra Oh.
She's amazing. So after writing Promising Young Women, she's working... Woman. God, see, I'm still doing it. It's just so easy. She is working on a film called Zatanna, which is currently pre-production, and it kind of looks like maybe a fantasy type of film.
Oh, okay.
So kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So that's, like I said, pre-production. Promising Young Women was her first feature film, but she did direct a short film in 2018 called Careful How You Go. And there was some homage to that in the film because the book that Cassie is reading at the coffee shop is Careful How You Go.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the short film that Emerald Fennell did.
Okay.
In a couple years before this one. The other lady, lovely leading lady to focus on is Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
What is the first thing you saw Carey Mulligan in?
Promising Young Women.
Woman.
I think this, yeah.
That is not the, it can't possibly be.
I swear. Now, unless I've seen her and I didn't recognize her, this.
I have one that you will.
Okay, what is
okay,
it?
Okay, so her first acting credit is 2005 as Kitty Bennett in Pride and Prejudice.
Holy fucking shit. Dude, oh my gosh, that is her.
Jenna Malone plays Lydia, the really annoying fucking sister that gets married to that guy and they have to like give him all this money. She's the other sister that they're like,
and she's always right next to Natalie Portman. who plays in Pride and Prejudice? Keira Knightley?
Yeah. No, that I mean, she's Kitty's the sister that's always with Lydia, the annoying one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're the two younger ones. Oh, but then it's the other chick from Gone Girl who's in that movie.
Yeah, Rosamund Pike.
Yeah,
she's
right?
She's Jane.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Yes.
So that's the first thing I saw Carey Mulligan.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, so
she's
really good in that. Yeah. Yeah, so she's good in that. She's had a lot of really good films, and Education with Peter Sarsgaard, okay, which is a really good one. Public Enemies. She was in the film Brothers with Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Natalie Portman. She's in this film called Never Let Me Go, which is a personal favorite of mine. It's also a novel. It's with Keira Knightley and Andrew Garfield. It is excellent. Definitely an indie film. Very okay. unique premise. It's amazing. I think you'd actually really like it.
I might give it a try.
She plays Daisy Buchanan in The Great Gatsby.
Oh my gosh. Shut your filthy mouth.
Are you serious? Are you blind?
I am so blind.
You are.
Because she's such a good actress. She just melts away.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
She is Daisy.
She is what? Daisy.
Oh my gosh.
She's in a film called Mudbound. And most recently, she's in a film called The Dig, which also stars Ralph Fiennes.
I haven't seen that.
Well, it's not out yet.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it just came out. But so who is Ralph Fiennes? Who does he play? Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
Oh my gosh, stop quizzing me.
Oh, is this uncomfortable for you?
Yeah,
you do this to me every time.
I'm very uncomfortable.
He's Voldemort.
Oh.
That's Ralph Fiennes. He also has a brother called Joseph Fiennes, who is in Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, with the mustache.
Yes.
He plays Shakespeare.
Yes.
He's very attractive.
Yeah, he's really hot.
Yeah.
For sure.
He was very attractive in the movie.
Well, anyway, on a personal note, she's married to Mumford & Sons frontman Marcus Mumford.
I hate that name, Mumford & Sons. It sounds like a disease. I got the Mumfords.
Like mums? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
I love Mumford & Sons. I guess they were like childhood pen pals or something, which is pretty cute.
It's good in a coffee shop, but that's about it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I saw them live, so anyway.
Oh.
They're very good. So anyway, let's dive right in. So there's obviously some things that you want to talk about, but I think as the captain and as the woman in the room.
Yes, this is all for you,
yes,
babe.
So in the film, some of the stuff that Cassie does is basically, I don't know how to say it. There's no polite way to say it.
Say it,
I don't think. She makes men very uncomfortable and puts them in a position where they fucking should be.
Yes.
And so what she does is she goes to bars and she's kind of all dolled up and she has these different wigs and different outfits and makeup is smudged and she acts like she's fall down drunk.
Yes.
And so then you have this nice guy that's always wanting to see, oh, are you okay? Let me take you home. Takes advantage of the situation, ends up not being a nice guy, does things that are, you know, starts kissing that, oh, you're okay. You know, at the very beginning of the movie, we see Adam Brody do this.
Yeah.
And he's with these two other guys that are complete douchebags. And they're talking shit about this woman that they work with. And
who is Cassie?
Right. And they're like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. No, it's not her.
They're talking. At work. My apologies.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so they're talking about this woman. And,
yeah. Very
and
degrading.
Very degrading and being completely misogynistic.
Yes.
Full of male privilege.
Yes.
And then Adam Brody is like, oh, come on. You know, you think like, oh, he's the nice guy in this situation. He walks over to Cassie. Hey, are you okay? Like,
and prior to that, his two coworkers see them first and automatically just disgusting kind of behavior.
Like, well, and it's disgusting behavior of like, ooh, a challenge. I can't wait to get that. But then it's also like, you know, they do this to themselves, meaning women, mm-hmm. and
kind of
you
justifying
know,
their
just
behavior.
Absolutely.
Even before even going over there, it's just like, even the forethought of like, even if I went over there, it's justified because they are bringing this on to themselves.
Right. Which is a national conversation we have all the time, and it plays to men's benefit all the time. Mm-hmm. Men always have this benefit. And so Adam Brody goes over there and he's, you know, we think, oh, he's a nice guy. And so he's like, you know, let me take you home. And like, we're in the cab. And then it's like, well, gosh, my apartment's just right here. And so then they go upstairs and he pours himself a small drink, pours her a really big drink, starts to kiss her. He's making out with her and she is not making out with him. Like you see her mouth completely closed.
Close,
and he's just slopping all over her. And then she's like, you know, I need to lay down. Oh, great. Puts her in his bed. And then it's the whole like, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then it's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. You're safe. You're safe. Which is a situation I've been in before where men constantly like, I, no, it's okay. I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy here.
Also complimenting her. You're so pretty. You're so gorgeous.
You're so pretty. We have such a connection. Like, yeah. Men will say fucking anything to get some pussy, honest to God. And it's just, it's disgusting.
So true, and
it's like, and I hate to be that vulgar about it, but they are. Shouldn't I be?
Yeah.
But like, and it's so weak and it's cowardly and it's disgusting. But they get away with it all the time. And so then we see her like snap straight up and she's like, I said, what are you doing? And he's like, oh shit. Like this girl is sober because she's not drunk at all. And so we see her do this to a few men.
Yeah.
And she's kind of sending the message of like, watch out. There's a lot of us that do this. Like basically next time you go to the bar, why don't you think about this before you try to prey on somebody that's vulnerable?
Right.
And so that's kind of how that starts. And then she meets Ryan, re-meets Ryan, the, you know, student from medical school, and they sort of hit it off and it's funny. And it's like, you know, he's really into it and she's like, fuck you. And like, kind of has that like dark humor sort of aspects to it. So,
yeah.
Go for it.
Go for what?
You want to say something? What is it?
No, I have nothing to say.
I thought you said you had some issue with something.
I don't have any issues. I actually really enjoyed this movie.
Oh, yeah. Are you lying to me?
No. I'm kind of, listen, people, I'm scared. She has a knife to my throat. Oh my God. I actually really, really, really like this movie. When I watched the trailer.
Oh.
Watching the trailer, I feel like the trailer does not do the movie justice. So I want to like rewind back a little bit before we like kind of discuss the details of the movie.
Okay.
It's just like my first experience is I watched the trailer and I immediately thought of like Kill Bill, I Spit on Your Grave, these kind of female
revenge
films that go extremely dark. My roommate watched the movie before I did and he said he was so shocked that she went so far. As far as like she allowed the men to touch her, feel her,
finger her. Yeah.
But didn't mention anything else. So in my head, I'm like, she's chopping off dicks. She's cutting. Because like that's what we're so used to in these films.
I see. So much more nuanced than that.
Yeah. She never takes it to that point. So watching the movie, I was confused as fuck for the first like half an hour because I'm just like, what is this movie? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Okay. The moment I started watching it more and I kind of like took a step back and understand what Miss Fennell, what's her first name again?
Emerald
Fennell was doing, I was like, holy shit, this woman is smart as hell.
Smart as hell.
And I think we have to start with that as the basis. It's like she is taking, like you said, this is a dark comedy. And it's a kind of thriller / revenge film, but she's flipping the genre on its head.
Yeah.
You know, you have the character Cassie, and Aaron did a great job. Aaron, you were right in front of me. You did a great job kind of.
Aaron, who's no longer here?
I'm so used to
she's
like.
She's left the building.
I'm so used to being like work meetings. You do that in work meetings all the time.
Oh, like thanks. Thank you, Colin.
Yeah.
Now back to you.
Yeah. You did such a good job of kind of explaining like that's her methodology of like getting these men in check.
Right.
It's like. Flipping their the notion inside out and making them extremely uncomfortable. Every time she wakes up and she's sober, she makes the men into victims in a way that I don't think a man, unless a man is in jail, a man never knows how a woman feels as far as like feeling vulnerable, feeling ashamed, scared. And so her ability to do that, I was like, holy shit, like that's impressive. Like you can never make a man feel like that unless there's a threat of violence or taking away his masculinity. Mm-hmm. And she made these men terrified. Mm-hmm. And so the moment I was like, oh my gosh, like I start like thinking about what references were she actually going after? She wasn't going after like a Kill Bill, you know what I mean? This badass woman who was becoming empowered by her trauma.
Right.
And I also think I really want to add, this is not, and I use air quotes, not her trauma, it's her best friend's trauma. So that's the key thing is like Carrie, we start to see, we know that
Cassie,
their names are too similar. We start to see that Cassie, She drops out of med school. She's living with her parents. Her life isn't progressing. She's turning 30. I automatically was thinking like, oh my gosh, she was raped. And this is the reason why she's doing this to these men. Mm-hmm. No, it's her best friend. Mm-hmm. Her best friend was raped. She drops out of med school with her best friend. She takes care of her best friend. And so you're seeing this. You become Cassie. You know what I mean? She is living the drama or the trauma of her friend and taking it on herself. Yeah. Her friend commits suicide because life became too hard because she couldn't escape that kind of
And that's something situation. That's never said.
No.
But it's obviously we know that Nina is deceased. Yeah, and then eventually it's said later she's dead, but we never know why. Of course we know that she's died by suicide because of the trauma.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So basically what happens is there's something that's happened at med school. You know, she hears this name, Alexander Monroe, and it's like immediately the audience knows that's the guy that did it, right? Yeah. That's the guy. And so she starts to set up these meetings with different people that were involved. And so that's when we see Allison Brie, who plays like Maddie, and she plays this like kind of your boring ass, rich, white mom. Oh my God, domestic bliss, la, 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 la. And so, you know, Cassie gets her drunk at lunch and is basically like, hey, I wanted to talk to you about why I dropped out of med school. And then immediately you're like, she's like, oh shit, oh shit. Like, and so then she basically pays this guy to bring this drunk woman, Maddie, up to a hotel room and make her think that she's maybe done something with this man. Yeah.
And it's like a form of punishment.
And it's a form of punishment because Maddie is like, everybody says, oh, we were so young. We were kids. You know, she was drunk. And that's always the thing that Cassie then throws in people's face. Like, so she shouldn't have been drunk. This is all her fault. Shouldn't have been drunk. This is why this happened. Right. And everyone's like, no, it's not, you know, it's not all that. But, you know, so Maddie is kind of defending people and doesn't want to rock the boat, doesn't want...
Well, then more than anything, it's like internalized misogyny.
Absolutely.
Like Maddie feeds into this, like... Absolutely. Even before, like the key... Like you could... There was never one competition. Like you could tell Cassie, she knows the people in her life.
Yeah.
Like she knows how everyone operates, what's their train of thought.
Yes.
And so she, instead of her first glass, it was like ginger ale, and she gives her champagne. They have like a little drinking competition where they're eyeing each other and seeing who can finish a drink for, or who would stop drinking first.
Yeah.
And so it's constantly, she knows this girl is competitive. Yeah. She wants to be seen as important. So she feeds into that.
Yeah.
And then Maddie, one of the first comments that Maddie says, I'm like, oh shit, this is not going to go good. Maddie's all like, you know what? Every guy wants a good girl. And at that point I was like, you're feeding into this myth,
even though
that you were equally a slut in college too.
Absolutely.
Even though you had, and I'm using air quotes for slut, even though you were having, you were sleeping around, you made the right choices. You were, you played hard to get just enough. And just because Nina or Cassie, they were a little bit more freer or they, had a little bit more fun than you.
Or had worse luck than
you. Then you were the good girl. And so all of your life is accomplished. Like everything that you got in life was because you made the right choices.
Right.
So I just thought like that scene to me, again, was like the subversion of what I thought. And the reason why, I think it's right around that theme, that scene, I was like, oh, this is so smart. Like, this is more
so
like
smart.
Like the movie Jawbreakers or Heathers or like,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean, this like campy kind of,
but this was not campy.
Oh, see, I thought it was super campy.
This was calculated.
No, I thought the movie was campy as a whole. I thought this movie was campy.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, I did too. I thought
the colors were interesting.
I thought the color scheme was campy. I thought the music choice was campy. I thought the characterizations were campy. I thought like,
I guess I have such a negative view of that word.
Oh no,
so
I love
not.
It.
But it was just the feelings were just too real for me to think it was campy. And so anyway,
thought the feelings were too real.
They were not too real, but they were so real that to me it doesn't seem campy when it's that, when the stakes are that high.
Yeah.
And like putting myself in that situation of being around men while I was intoxicated and being taken advantage of and those types of things, and blaming myself my whole life for it, you know? And no, it's like, yeah. So it was, it just felt like very real in that aspect.
But I think there's a separation that, and this is what I noticed and I really enjoyed about this movie. It's like, there's two storylines that are going on. Like, as we progress through the movie, you learn more about Nina and you learn about her story as you learn about Cassie. And I felt, yes, Cassie was the camp, whereas Nina was the reality that you felt and you
interesting.
See. Whereas Cassie, like, she, although she had, she really didn't have like an arc as far as like growth. Like, even though she fell in love
that,
with,
I think that was the point.
Yeah. And which I loved. I think that's the point. Yeah. Like, her focus wasn't so much that we get to know Cassie and we get to see her grow or change or anything. She's a woman on a mission. I think that's the one thing that Emerald stole from the kind of tropes of like female revenge films. Like those, Kill Bill, Uma Thurman's character's name in that movie?
The Bride.
The Bride. Like, her only goal is to kill. She doesn't even, when she finds out about her daughter, she's still like, I'm going to kill this motherfucker and then I'm going to take my kid and go home.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing with Cassie. She's like, yeah, I don't care. You know what I mean? When her and her boyfriend, Ryan, was his name?
Yeah, Ryan.
When she found out that Ryan was involved with the video, there was no kind of teary eye of like, oh my gosh, I loved you. It was just like, okay. I don't care.
Rage.
You know what I mean? Because she was so focused. And whereas you got to see through her actions, you got to see the kind of beauty behind Nina. And when she goes and sees her mom and her father saying like Nina was like a daughter, you got to see how incredible Nina was.
Right.
Because Cassie was so static as far as a character.
Right. And so in talking about that is like, there's a possibility for an arc, but something got in the way. And so she goes to Nina's mother's house. And so at this time, we know that Nina was like basically gang raped at medical school. Mm-hmm. And like people watched and laughed. And she was so harassed by it. And she was so overcome that she dropped out of medical school and eventually took her own life. And so we see her talking to Nina's mom. And it's very apparent that they don't see each other a lot, but there's still like a friendly relationship there. Nina and Cassie have been friends since they were like 4 years old, basically. And so Nina's mom, who's played by Molly Shannon, is basically like, you can't fix this. Like, you need to move on too. And by fix this, she means, so we then learn that Cassie was not there that night. And that is the guilt that's eating her alive, is she was not there with Nina at that party. And because she wasn't, she feels so guilty and she wants to fix this. And so she's thinking, okay, fine. She throws away that notebook where she keeps all those men's names that she catches in, you know, catches them being predators, essentially. You know, and we see her like, okay, fine. Okay, she's moving on. You know, Ryan tells her, I'm falling in love with you. She says it back. She seems really happy. And then Maddie comes into the picture again. And meanwhile, the whole time, Maddie's been trying to contact Cassie because she's like, oh my God, like, did I do something with this person? And Cassie's like, yeah, bitch, see how it feels? Like, you don't know, but you were drunk. So isn't this your fault? And so she said, you know, I need to show you something. And then we learn about the video.
Yeah.
So Maddie shows her this video. And she was like, I wouldn't watch it if I was you. Everybody's seen it, you know, and I'm so sorry to, you know, basically was like, this is my reckoning. I've, you know, and at this point she's talked to her, she's talked to the dean, she's talked to the lawyer that got
Cassie has,
you know, Cassie has. And so she's mapped her whole thing out.
And at each point she was trying to seek revenge. Like for the dean, she picks up the dean's daughter and takes her to a random diner, but then and steals the daughter's cell phone, gives it back to the dean. It's just like, your daughter's somewhere with a bunch of guys at a hotel room.
Yeah.
And it's just saying, and the dean, you know, of course, is a woman, but she is like protecting the guys, and she has a history of like, well, they're good young men, and he's so
educated.
We
have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Which is a really big problem in higher education.
Yeah, which we could talk about.
Yes, please.
About our jobs. And then even the therapist, it was the same thing. The therapist kind of downplayed Nina and kind of, and then in court, he like has a history.
Oh, he's a lawyer.
Or lawyer, excuse me. The lawyer, I thought he was a therapist for some reason. The lawyer, he downplays Nina and really attacks her credibility. And he's like, I got bonuses. And he was probably the only character who like knew the consequences of what he did.
And he had like a psychotic break and he couldn't sleep. And he asked for her forgiveness. He's crying. And she says she forgives him. And she uses him later. And basically is like, I'm giving you a chance to redeem yourself, which he does. Right.
Yeah. And she almost had like a hitman or like a,
and she was going to send somebody in there to fuck him
up. I was like, girl,
damn bitch.
Yeah.
And so, which I loved. And so anyway, so we know about the video. So Maddie leaves and she's like, don't ever talk to me again. Please don't ever contact me, you know? And, so Cassie decides to watch the video and she's watching it and she's crying. And then we hear Ryan's voice.
Yeah.
And that's when you know, oh no, shit. There will be no arc today.
No.
Because she was going to leave this behind. She was going to, you know, just kind of move on with her life. That's what Nina would have wanted. That's what, you know, she was told to do by Nina's mom. But then she's like, oh, fuck no. And so she listens and Ryan doesn't participate, of course, but it's being a bystander. Yeah. It's watching some woman at a college party who is so drunk she can barely hold her head up getting completely assaulted.
Yeah.
Right?
And I thought that was the most powerful part about this movie is the portrayal of men. And you mentioned it, like all the male actors were from films or television shows that are beloved, and they're characters who were the nice guys.
Yeah.
And so Emerald has really, and that's why the BAFTAs definitely deserve like best casting, because she purposely put people who you've seen in teen movies and in these kind of collars that are nice guys. And even like Jennifer Coolidge, and that, like, she was Stifler's mom. Like, it was so funny to see these people who have been in similar kind of films kind of turned around.
Like Molly Shannon.
Yeah.
Not a comic role. I mean, it's very small, but you know, it's not
really.
Yeah.
But I love this kind of like this nice guy trope, because in movies like Animal House and all these like Superbad, you have these nice guys who do and say some of the similar things that these men have said, and they're rewarded for it.
Absolutely.
And so here's the first time we have a movie where the woman isn't going and like chopping off their balls or anything. But she's putting them in a position to actually understand the gravity of their decisions, and really shows us as the audience of like, no, there's no such thing as nice guys.
No, there's not.
No. And like, I feel so strongly that women, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, women are raised, especially women today, or any femme-identified individual, are raised to look for men who are big and burly, who are predators, who look like they're dangerous, who look like they'll rape you, who look dangerous. But we subvert these kind of guys that are in this movie, who are successful, who are kind, who seemingly are nice, who get the good grades, who are kind of dorky, who are pediatricians. And those are the men, at so many times, because they get so many passes, who are sometimes the worst.
Yeah.
Because they haven't, they're like, I'm not that guy. I'm not the dick jock who's going around and just like slinging dick, and they're like, I can't even. No, they're the guy who's patient, who sits in the corner. And women are taught like, well, this man isn't sexually active because of you. Not because of his own choice. It's because women like you won't have sex with him.
Right.
And so like his behavior is not even his own fault. It's a woman's fault. And so I just loved how she shines. I mean, the entire movie shines a light on the actions of this man and doesn't forgive everyone. Even like you just said, Ryan was a bystander.
Yeah.
But still, he should be held accountable for the actions.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is another thing that she does in this film so well, and you hit the nail on the head, is like the male fragility.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so God. Often, because men are so weak and fragile, and that is my stance on men in general.
Yeah.
Straight men. And except for Stethoscope.
Stethoscope's a strong man.
He's such a good person. And so we see it a few times, but the male fragility thing, and I can't, if I had a dollar for every time this has happened to me, I would have a fucking mansion. There's a scene that after she does this, you know, I'm drunk thing, you know, for Adam Brody's character, the first time she's walking home and you see red down her arm and you're like, holy shit, did she kill him? But she's like eating a hot dog with ketchup. And then she's obviously in her clothes from last night. There's construction workers across the street that are like, hey baby, how much, you know, being fucking idiots.
Yeah.
And then she just stops and stares at them. And they're like, oh, you know, no smile, which is the one that just, I could probably kill someone. But, and then she just continues to stare at them, like gives them nothing, just stands across the street and stares at them. And they're like, fine, you fucking bitch, can't take a joke.
Yeah.
If I had a dollar for every time I ignored somebody or declined someone's advances or maybe rescheduled them and they got angry and be like, fine, you fucking bitch, you're ugly, I don't want to go out with you anyway. Yeah. I would be fucking rich. And so especially in this state. I'll tell you what. Yeah. Dating here versus living in Harris Ranch. Good Lord Almighty.
Living high on the hog.
Shit. And so I, so that was, she displayed that so well, even in a nice guy like Ryan.
Yeah.
When she's finally, so Cassie goes to confront him about this.
Oh God.
That scene was so amazing to me because he's put in a corner, he has a decision to make.
He could
have owned up to it
and said, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong. What can I do to make
this
better?
But instead he was like, the first thing that all these men say are like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Or I was young. We were kids.
Because they're never held accountable for this. And they truly, I honest to God, think that a lot of men believe that. I didn't do anything wrong. Which, that's not true. You are doing something wrong. But because they're not held accountable for it, because that's not the way our justice system works, they get away with it. And so they can continue with that narrative in their head.
Well, yeah. And the concept is like youth. Like, when do boys stop being boys and they turn into men? And,
right.
You know what I mean? Air quotes. Like, right. And that's the problem that we see is like, and I love the fact that these weren't like college age, like college students that we work with, because like, that excuse extends to like undergrad.
Absolutely.
They were in graduate school. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's the part where I'm just like, how the fuck? And that's the reality. Those are the moments where I felt uncomfortable, not uncomfortable, but I was like shaken. I had like a moment of disequilibrium. Absolutely. It's like these moments where either I'm like, how do these men not recognize what they did and feel remorse? How can they have so many excuses for it? That was crazy for me.
And keep doing it again and again and again.
And the other problem I had was like any scene where Cassie was like, any scene where I thought Cassie could be in danger, I was just like, I can't, I feel uncomfortable. Because like, I know the reality.
Scary.
Yes, it was scary. Because I know the reality of like what would actually happen.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but we do see Ryan say like, please forgive me for this, because he's in love with her. And she's like, oh no, no, baby cakes. Like,
no,
and
yeah.
She's like, I have this video. I could ruin your fucking life if you don't tell me where this bachelor party is.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So she goes to this bachelor party where Al Monroe, who has, raped Nina and filmed it and, you know, all of these disgusting things. And so she goes and she dresses up as a stripper. And, you know, everyone's so pissed drunk already. Like, it's not like anybody like recognizes her mm-hmm. or anything. And so eventually she kind of runs the show and is like, okay. So she gets everyone drunk. She slips something in their drink. So she goes upstairs with the groom, the guy that raped Nina. And she like handcuffs him. And then he's like, what's your name? And she says, Nina Fisher.
Yeah.
And he was like,
No, don't play with me.
No. Like, and then she was like, no, yeah, that's my name. And she's wearing the necklace that says Nina on it, mm-hmm. right? They have the best friend's necklace. She leaves the other one in the register that Laverne Cox finds.
The coffee shop that she works at.
The coffee shop, Gail, her boss. And so, so he was like, well, that, you know, she's dead. And she was like, interesting. Like, so she's like toying with him. It is a cat and mouse situation.
Yeah.
And so she basically is like, I want you to tell me what you did. The whole time she wants men to take responsibility for their shitty actions. That's what she wants.
Yeah. And it's, yeah.
Like you said, she's not cutting anybody's balls off.
No, she just wants the truth.
Own up to your mistake.
And that I think is the largest problem we see in our reality is that like in our justice system, even on our school campuses, we protect so many men from the truth, from owning up to the truth.
Absolutely.
And like, and wrestling with that, because in so many cases, like we can a lot of young men like go to jail or, oh my gosh, their careers are going to be in. But like sometimes it's just the truth, the gravity of saying like, I destroyed another person's life is equally as powerful. It's equally as powerful.
Because that's forever.
Yeah, it always is.
That trauma is forever.
Yeah, it is.
And so eventually she's toying with him and she's like, I'm going to make sure you never forget her name. So kind of the sadistic thing that she does, she takes a scalpel and she's going to write Nina into this guy's name, so he never forgets, right? Because she keeps asking him, like, what'd you do? And he's like, I didn't do anything wrong. Eventually, he gets a hand free because he's handcuffed, and then he kills her, smothers her with a pillow. And I thought the whole time, I'm like, she's playing dead. Yeah, she's for sure playing dead. But no, he, like, puts a knee on the pillow over her mouth and kills her, smothers her. The next morning, Joe, who's another medical school student, who's just a shithead dumbass,
Who plays the guy from The New Girl, right?
Yeah, he's Max Greenfield. He plays Schmidt. Ugh. And he is like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. No, this was an accident.
You're
like,
still a good guy.
You're still a good guy. Everything's going to be fine. Your wife's not, or your fiance's not going to find out. Helps him basically dispose of the body.
Yeah, burn her right? body.
Burn her body. They do that. And the whole time, you know, Al is crying and whimpering like a little fucker. And so, because he's just killed someone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the whole time Joe has no idea who this person is.
Yeah. And which is very interesting because that's the second time I saw, like, the men are so, I love that you mentioned male fragility because the men in these movies are weak. These are some like sad ass, like tired. And like, I think she did it on purpose. Like there's two scenes where the men are like, running off like, and I think that's the reality. I mean, so many times we like hold these men up to be like men to be like these strong, but reality is like the men who kind of perpetrate these actions are these are what the reality. Like, that's what these men are in the inside. They're weak. They're tired. They're sad.
They're cowardly.
Cowardly.
They're they're useless. Nothing.
Yeah.
They're nothing. They mean nothing.
Yeah.
Like if I'm not shedding a tear over any man like that who's no longer existing, and so so then you know we see them like burn her body essentially, right? And then but you know as the audience like this isn't over.
Interesting enough,
this isn't over.
I did some research, and that was supposed to be the ending.
I would have been very upset.
The credits were supposed to roll. Another interesting fact that I found out: the death scene, which I couldn't watch.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah,
2 minutes and 2.5 minutes, because that's how long it takes to
smother somebody.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
And Emerald's father was a cop and told her that, and so she made it 2.5 minutes. And it's the I mean, we normally when you see these scenes, like when if a woman dies, it's typically off screen. You never see it on. And so
we'll see part of her body.
Yeah. And I love how like they like zoomed in really close right to her face. And actually had to see her. You saw her die. You hear her last breath.
Yeah.
So powerful.
Yeah. And I would have been deeply upset if the credits had rolled because she doesn't get her revenge if that's the case.
But, well, okay, continue because I have some thoughts.
But what happens is the wedding is the next day. She has...
Which is like in the same place, like pretty much
in
like...
In the same place.
Like next to where her body is. Right. So it's like, oh, this is weird.
Right. It's in like the woods or some shit like that. And so then she has laid out this entire plan. Mm-hmm. And she has scheduled messages to go to Ryan.
Which like, I need to learn how to do.
Like, you thought this was the end. It's not. Love, Cassie and Nina, essentially. Yeah. She died for her best friend to get justice.
Yep.
There's the video.
That gets sent
out. She contacts the lawyer and says, this is where I'm going in case of my disappearance. So he knows to call the police, which he does. They're arrested. You know, you see Joe running away like a little bitch. And so I don't usually like using that word, but he is in that.
Sorry, everyone.
Sorry. But so she has died to get her friend justice because she can't move on anymore.
Yeah.
She was going to, and then she can't because the man that she fell in love with is just like everybody else.
Yeah. And which again is another subversion of the trope, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of the theme, like most female revenge movies, like, or all, revenge movies, like the main character gets to kill the person and then they walk away in the sunset, limp away. And I think that's why this is so powerful. It's like the only way Nina could get revenge is if another pretty white girl dies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's the only way. Like they didn't care about if Nina was raped, but like now that, and or they didn't care about her suicide, but now that there's a missing girl, that's the only time where we're like, as a nation, like, oh my God, we're like, you know, frantic parents, you know, a tough PA who's going around asking all the tough questions. Like, that's the only way women can get revenge.
Absolutely.
So here's a question.
Yes.
When you saw Nina, like, or not Nina, when you saw Cassie, like, put her keys, like, when she's going up to the cabin, she parks her cars away, she puts her keys up, did you feel like she's going to die?
I felt like she's setting up for something. That actually didn't. That's not the first thing that crossed
my
mind. See,
that was the first thing that crossed my mind. It's like, she's going to die. Like, I knew she's going to. There is no way. Although, yeah, I still strongly feel like this movie's a little campy, especially that wedding scene with all the freaking hippies.
Oh, my God. That was so.
That was so funny, but that was so campy.
So good.
I was like, that, like, a woman walking to a room full of, like, intoxicated frat bros. Mm-hmm. Like, and you could see a scene where she's like setting up and she like puts her purse down and you could just feel, you could see her body like the first time where she realizes the gravity of what she's doing.
Tense. Yeah.
And I'm just like, she's going to die. There's no way that this woman, a real woman like you, Aaron, could walk into a room full of men and like walk out unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and potentially like hurt them. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I would
no
do
way.
That. Yeah.
Wait, you would do that?
Do what?
Like,
hurt them?
I mean, yeah, you would hurt them, but sure. I'm just like,
if I had to.
Yeah. If you had to, but like, I just felt like she's going to die.
Yeah. And she's doing it for a purpose, right? Because yeah. she cannot move on, because that's what people are telling her in the movie. Move on, move on, move on. You're not yourself, blah, blah, blah.
Do you feel like she needed, like, she had to sacrifice herself?
I think that. Well, I don't. I the word had. I mean, she did what she did.
Yeah.
She did what she needed to do in her eyes.
Yeah. And that's the sad part is like, you can tell from the start of the movie, like this woman has beyond moved on. Like this, her life has ended.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's even to the point where like, I love, this is like a truly made for women.
Yeah.
Cause the music is like this poppy. Like if you did not grow up
yes.
in the early to like 1990, like born
Paris Hilton.
Oh my gosh. If
that
you were
was
a millennial,
a really good scene.
That was a, like, I didn't need scene. That scene, but like that song, I was just like, oh, you had great. To be like in like, you know what I mean? Junior high school.
Ninth grade, eighth
yeah.
grade.
Oh, 10th yeah. grade. Because totally. Like the music, the soundtrack was just like
totally.
For millennial women.
It was awesome.
The color scheme. Like this wasn't like Kill Bill where like she's like a tough bat. Like she was a soft, prissy, bow and hair, skirt.
Yeah, she dressed very feminine.
It was a very feminine
movie. She didn't act
movie.
Feminine, but she dressed very feminine.
No, and she was
spitting in people's coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, she was just, she was a pissed off woman for yeah. sure, but she was very, presented very feminine.
Yes, and she was so consumed with anger and she
yeah.
was so consumed with guilt that she wanted to be with her best friend again.
Yeah.
They had
and
been
even,
together since day one.
Yeah.
And so you see in the ashes when the dogs like sniff her scent out, essentially, is the necklace that says Nina
yeah.
because gold doesn't burn. And
yeah.
so.
Gold doesn't burn.
It
like
doesn't.
That.
And so, so we see that. You know, she, the whole time she's doing it for Nina.
Yeah, she has a movie. Like, yeah, she's still living with her parents.
Yeah.
I think the movie title, and this is why I'm so upset about the movie title. I think the movie should be Promising Young Women to honor both Nina and
Cassie.
Oh,
interesting.
But I love the fact that they call it Promising Young Woman because we so many times when you see these rape cases on TV, mm-hmm. that is the line that they use. This is a promising young man. He had so much promise and we're going to throw away his life over one accident.
Yeah.
And we never consider
one
like,
mistake.
Who is, and like the line where she's all like, no one has said Nina's name. And so now
yes.
it's time for someone. And I was like, oh my God, because that happens so many times. The victims in these rape cases disappear
yeah.
for their own safety a lot of the times,
yeah.
for their own concern. But a lot of times it's just because we're so entrenched in like focusing right. on men and how promising they are. And but we never talk about the young woman whose life is forever changed
ruined.
And they had promise and they had talent and now their lives are destroyed and ruined. And now they have to look behind their back and be concerned and not
yeah.
fall in love because of the men in their lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing, like, you know, even like, so she drops out of med school, but even the, one of the first things Ryan said is like, you know, you were ahead of everyone.
Oh, God,
you were
yeah.
so good, which is what she was so promising. She wanted to be a doctor for as long as she could remember.
Yeah.
And then the fragility moment with Ryan is when she's like, basically like, you know, this is what you need to do. I'll show the video and kind of do whatever the fuck I want with it. And he's like, yeah, you fucking failure.
Yeah. Oh my God. When
and
he said
so,
that, I was just like,
which this is the thing. Like, society looks at those kinds of men's like, oh, I can't believe they would do something like that. I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe everything. Like anytime someone's like, wow, he'd be the last person. Really?
Yeah.
Really? Do we still believe that? I don't.
Yeah. I think we give men more chances to misbehave. I mean, and
we
I think
give
it starts
endless from, chances.
Yeah. I think it starts from when they're young. Boys will be boys. Boys are allowed to be aggressive and to be.
Oh, he's just doing that because he likes you.
Yeah. And we paint this story that like, oh, these men, they, you know, I mean, it's a woman. Like I was just talking to somebody about like, we train women. It's a woman's job to make a boy into a man. It's not his own job to do self-discovery work. For a woman, though, it is the trauma. It's the pain. It's either rape, like in this movie, or in like revenge movies, like this, or it's childbirth, or it's a loss of love to make a woman. You know what I mean? And it's never just like it's self-discovery to make a woman.
Absolutely,
a woman. It's internally. Whereas a man, and they need a woman to kind of guide them and help them and turn them into the real man. It's just like it's fucking
do the work
shit.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Which is something I love so much about Seth, is he did that work
to
himself.
Seth. Yeah, Seth is a good one.
He's the best one.
I did enjoy this movie. I do have two critiques.
What are your critiques?
I'll start with the soft one. Okay. This movie was too damn long for me.
Wait, do you want it to be 37 minutes? Like I feel
I thought
like
it could have been a tight hour and 40. I honestly could. By halftime, halftime.
It was an hour and 57
reference.
Minutes.
It was too long.
Some of that is credits.
I, like an hour 30 minutes would have been good for me. There were so many scenes where I'm just like, this is hella long. Let's push the pace a little bit.
You're impatient.
I'm not impatient. It's just like, there were just scenes where I'm just like this. And now like, I want to rewatch it. I'm definitely going to rewatch it. But there were scenes where I'm just like, I didn't really need this. Like all the love scenes, like now watching the ending and seeing how it ends, I'm like, did I really need this? Like,
know.
It didn't add anything.
I think it does because it shows like she is starting to trust. She is.
Is she?
Yes.
I didn't.
She
feel
says,
that way.
"I'm falling in love with you too."
Like, I feel like she's just trying to, become normal. I don't know.
I don't think that's true.
That's what I read it as. I didn't read it as like she's actually like engaging. I've read it as like she's like, okay.
She's engaging with life again.
Sure. I just
okay. What's
it was
your
too
hard
long.
Critique?
My hard critique. Excellent movie. This movie is made for white women.
Okay.
This movie is not, this was made by a white woman and made for white women. Like there were scenes in the movie where I'm just like, especially because there's two people of color in this film. And I was just like, I wish they weren't in the movie.
I
didn't wish Laverne Cox character was in the movie because I thought it was just like, the funny like black girl who works with me. Like there was no kind of diving into that relationship. Like I was like, why is she so involved in your life? There's like a scene where they're all eating pizza together and I'm just like, do you actually care about this woman?
That's like
Cassie?
Her only friend.
Is it? Was it her friend? There was no interest in Laverne's character. Like we didn't get any development in Laverne's character. It was all around Cassie. And I was just like, well,
she's the main character.
I know. But like for me, I'm like, why have a person of color in that role? Like it just felt for me, it was just like, it felt like, well, we got to have a couple more people of color in this role. The one that really bugged me was at a, I don't know if he had a name, but in the beginning scene, there's those three guys. And one of
his name's
black.
Walker. With the fedora.
With a fedora, which, listen, I love the fedora little mention in there because all creepy men wear fedoras in my world. When he was dragging her outside the bar, as a black man, who has like purposely walked across the street because I saw a white woman walking at night. I was like, that shit would not happen. There would be a cop. There would be another guy. Hey, are you okay? Hey. Because there's been so many times where I've been with white women or I've been around white women and I've been scared because the trope is like black men are, you know what I mean, perpetrate and like stalk white women. And there's a history in this country. So that really bothered me.
Okay.
It felt a little tone deaf because in reality, I just don't think that scene would have played out that way. And I thought it was a disservice that like, I get it. The movie was focused on something totally different. And I'm not trying to say men of color can also be fucking assholes and rapists and, you know what I mean, predators.
Yeah.
But I think the dynamic would look extremely different. Like you can't live in a country with like Emmett Till and not talk about like the history behind, you know, white women and white and black men. So that one really bothered me because I'm like, like black men are taught to like, they're not taught to like avoid white women, but there also is this historical narrative for most black men as far as like, what does it mean to be with a white woman or be alone with a white woman? Because there is a history that we're taught to like, white, you know what I mean?
Oh, that might, okay.
Yeah.
So I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, that one I was like,
I think the only like bounce back to that I would have is like, I think it's trying, and maybe, I mean, it definitely could be tone deaf, but I think the bounce back could be like, it can be anybody.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's what this movie is showing, that it can literally be, could be anyone.
It can be anyone, but again, it's different. Like I would be so interested to see like my mom or my friend, like a black, like my black friends or a woman of color, mm-hmm. like their perspective of the movie. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's tons of points of connection where like, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think how men treat women are different based on race. And I think mm-hmm. race always plays into that. And so I would love to see how a black woman.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
How they perceive this movie.
Yeah.
Either way. Yeah. Either way. Whatever the word is. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was super good. Smart. I thought it definitely deserved Best Director. Yes. At the Oscars, because Emerald kicked ass.
Kicked
like I'm like, this is a. She definitely deserved Best Screenplay because the writing was incredible.
Yeah, it was.
She deserved Best Director for sure. Best Picture. I need to finish Nomadland to really see. Oh my god, I screwed Nomadland. I screw up everything. to see if it's true, but honestly, this movie was a top contender. This movie was good.
Really good.
A little long, but really
very
good.
Smart.
Extremely. I'm excited. I will watch anything Emerald puts out.
Absolutely. I'm gonna watch her in Call the Midwife now.
Yeah, I kind of want to see it. Like, I'm more interested in her as a director, to be honest.
Oh, totally.
Because like I think she has such a smart point of view.
I can't wait.
And like normally I don't like. Normally, the whole like writer and director, because isn't that what Lady Bird was? She wrote and directed it.
I think so. I think she wrote it with somebody.
Okay.
I
typically like a little bit separation.
Interesting. Okay.
But Emerald Girl, you can do no wrong in my eyes, because this was incredible. I was not expecting to. I thought I would enjoy this movie. This is like. Up on the list.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good. Like I keep on like thinking about things and like incredible.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, I'm so glad to hear that.
Gosh, we could have done this for like 3 hours.
Holy shit, I know.
Anyway, well, thank you for making me watch this movie.
You're welcome. Thank you for liking as much as you did.
I'm really happy.
And thank you for pointing out the critiques, because I have none. So
she's like, it's good. It's perfect.
But your soft and your hard critique, I totally understand. And I think from different perspectives, I would love to hear that.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you what we do or doing next, because we don't know.
No.
But we'll see you next week.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Bye, folks.
Bye. Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to Let's Hear It for the Girls. It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoy learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening. Thank you.